Okay, we're going to start the work session at 6:03 PM on June 20th.
So this is Don from Crown Point Fiber. They have been contracted to run a new fiber Crown Castle. Still one of those days. Crown Castle fiber to run a new fiber trunk from Willett Parkway down West Entry Road to the new bus garage at the corner of McLean Drive and West Entry. There's not an existing conduit that they can use there, so they want to install a new conduit in the town's right-of-way. As you guys know, we have franchise agreements allowing utilities to use our right-of-way with National Grid, Time Warner Cable, Verizon Fios, and Verizon for their copper lines on poles and underground. Being that this is not going in they have other fiber trunks around town that they lease space from Verizon in their conduits from, this would not be the situation because Verizon doesn't have a conduit in this location. So the question is, what do they need to do to get a franchise agreement with us to use our right-of-way for their utility?
And how does this potentially benefit our highway garage?
It doesn't because it's not going that far.
Well, maybe it can't.
Could it?
I don't do sales, but I can quote it and give that to sales.
Well, I'm just throwing that out. I mean, if all that work's going to...
We've had a continuous problem with not having good internet access.
My understanding, I have been told...
In our highway garage.
That Verizon Fios is going to cross the railroad tracks this year and go to 60 Road.
Oh,
that's always tough. Railroad tracks.
Well, these aren't tough because they're not owned by CSX. They're owned by Empire State Development Corporation, who's the owner of the corporate park.
All good.
And so it's a...
That's easier.
Makes it easier.
It's very easy then because it's a simple easement process through the railroad tracks, bore under them, and good to go. So with that being said, nobody's given me a construction date for that yet, so that is certainly a possibility. So maybe the franchise deal is, you give us fiber to our highway garage, which is at the corner of 60 and West Entry, you can use it right away.
I can't make that call. I told you, I don't do sales. I just
So, I mean, I guess the thing to do here is, you guys must have run into this before.
Wait a minute. West Entry and 60 Road, how far is that from Gypsum?
Just past.
Paston?
Yeah.
Because I do have fiber on the pole line to Gypsum Express.
Oh, coming off 60 Road.
Yeah. So you guys really aren't far from me.
No, we're not far.
Yeah. Do I have to cross a railroad track to get to the garage?
Do you come to the corner of Brundage and 60?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
If you come to, if you get across, no, you wouldn't have to, no.
So that would be a possibility for the garage in the future. Right now, it's for the school district. See, we've, under the name FiberTech, we've provided service to the Baldensville School District, have OC and BOCES for years. So with them building their new bus garage out here, they had us quote what it would take to get out to here. And they actually hired us to do it. The franchise agreement was a little bit of a surprise, but not a big deal. We just got to know what your requirements are. Susan, or was it Sue?
Sue Marino, yeah.
Yeah, I spoke with her 3 weeks ago, and I was expecting a phone call back. I asked her to email my permits administrator what the requirements are for the franchise agreement. We haven't heard from her. So, since I live down the street, I figured I'd stop in and just ask around. That's how I got in touch with Al.
Right.
A day or two ago.
So, do you have maybe the thing to do here is, what do you typically see in these franchises? Because you must have these in other places.
Yeah, but I don't handle
them. Can you have your attorneys give us a sample of what you typically use and see?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That may be the easiest way to do this because pretty much all of ours have been the utility gives us what they want to see.
Got it.
And then we use that from a negotiating standpoint from there on.
Sure.
What the requirements will be.
Yep.
So
what if Verizon was sitting here?
Well, Verizon already has a franchise agreement in place. So if Verizon wants to own the conduit that they're going in, Verizon can put a conduit there.
Yeah.
Is this going to be used? Would anybody else other than the highway garage be able to use it?
With the
school bus garage?
Not unless they sign a contract with our company.
Okay, so you know, just
so we're
single use basically.
Yeah, we're an internet service provider, Ethernet and dark fiber. We don't provide services to your house. We only do government, hospitals, schools, cell towers. So it's a commercial, you know, it's a commercial service. So for an example, the Syracuse City School District is one of our customers, right along with SUNY Upstate. So, you know, they all look for fiber optic solutions, and this is no different, really.
Gotcha.
Currently, their bus garage is on 29 East Oneida, mm-hmm. you know, and they have a fiber optic circuit that goes from there back to East Molloy, where OCM BOSI's headquarters is. So now it'll be the same thing, only from out here all the way back to East Molloy.
So you got to take it from Oneida Street to...
We have our own fiber optic network that is that large within Onondaga County. And, I mean, I cover Onondaga County as far north as, and this is even Onondaga County, but what is it, Pulaski?
Oswego County.
Yeah, all the way down to Broome County. You know, those outsides, they're dark fiber point-to-point jobs, but we offer lit services in the Syracuse area, which is, we need a 20 meg circuit, you know what I mean? So our tech will install a switch after we splice the fiber and build to it.
So you do have some franchise agreements?
Oh yeah. I'm not privy to them because I'm not legal.
So that's a good starting point. Right? Right.
So Tony, do you have a card? Maybe you can...
I know his attorney.
Okay, perfect.
We're in the same firm. Okay.
Oh.
Matt Kerwin's doing it, I think.
Matt Kerwin?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I know him. But Crown Castle's always been wireless, and then they started buying fiber companies. So I know, like, John Marchese, who is our fiber tech attorney.
Yeah. Well, could be. He may be doing it. I thought that Matt Kerwin was doing it. But we'll get it. Whoever it is, we'll find it.
I'll leave these prints with you. These are an updated copy. You wanted everything moved to the south
side. Yeah.
So I had that updated, and then I had John Smith, our permits administrator, email that over to the town, too.
Perfect.
All right, if you need it, email me.
What's your hopeful timeline on this particular part of the project?
I think the school is expecting this done by September.
Wow.
So is the school bus, see, I was under the impression that the school bus garage wasn't going to open until 2020. Are they looking to open that in this fall?
A lot of times when a customer comes to us, they ask us how long it will take you to build it.
Yeah.
A job like this where I know I need to get a dig permit, I usually quote it 120 days.
Okay.
All right. So I think we designed it, we put together our traffic control, we applied. I think we're 30 days into it now.
Yeah.
No offense, but usually when attorneys get into it, slows everything down. Right? Because everybody's going to read their contract. Right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's for the Beeville School District. My kids go there. You know, the bus garage is going to want that new facility.
Yep. We understand.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Is it basically out of Oneida Street, out of 60 Road?
Yeah. Right now I have fiber out east and west on Route 31, you know, and then all the way back to my pop downtown. We lease Verizon Conduit coming up Willow Parkway.
Oh.
And we actually go all the way out to that cell tower. It's at the back of Radisson. So
North Entry Road there.
Yeah. So there's no conduit in here to lease from Verizon because they won't sublease unless they have a spare duct. They don't have it because they only built, you know, two. And one's for them. And then the other ones, if something fails, if they had a third, they lease it to me. But they don't. So we'll directional bore. It's typical in fiber construction. You know, we'll drill horizontally, pull back a 2-inch HDB tube, and then we'll pull our fiber through.
Right down West Entry?
Yep.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, I got with Al. Al said he prefers we stay on the south side of the road.
Just because I got the force main, the sanitary force main on the north side.
Yep.
Okay. Which has been problematic. It's a 50-year-old steel force main.
We sub our construction. You know, and I use everybody from like Todd Cable, DDS Utilities, usually Syracuse Utilities every now and then.
Okay. All right. We'll the attorneys can get together and hopefully we can have this ironed out at our next meeting.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, that's my business card here.
Okay.
That way, if he's on the wireless side of the house and is not familiar with the fiber side, we can get it together.
Okay.
All right. Hi.
How are you doing? Joe Saracini, town supervisor. Joe.
I'm Don Maugerian with Crown Castle Fiber.
Yep.
Formerly Fiber Tech.
Yep.
All right. And you just came in on the end of it.
Well, I'm
up to
speed on it.
Okay, great.
We met on it this afternoon.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Don.
We're good.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you
for
coming.
Thank you very much.
Be safe.
Next. LED streetlight conversion.
The most exciting reading I've ever had.
Wow.
No, there's two. There's each. Yeah, I just didn't get these stapled.
Thanks. Okay.
I have pretty well for myself, so I'm going to scare with Tony. The top sheet is, I believe your top sheet is a construction cost estimate. Yes. Our low quote so far is from Danforth. I think their quotation, the actual quotation, is lacking in some detail that I'd like to see before we, you know, they sent a proposal that's a one-page proposal. They want to use it as a contract, and I don't exactly feel comfortable using a one-page proposal as a contract, so I think we want to iron that out before we get too far with them. But they're, as of right now, their quote is low, and I...
Significantly lower.
Significantly lower, and I think there's some negotiation there that we might even be able to save a little more money. So our total cost, estimated total cost for the project, as it stands right now, is $1.8 million.
So if you don't mind, Al, why do you think that they sent us a one-page paper?
Well, because what contractor doesn't want a simple contract that doesn't hold them to anything?
No, Beth. Is this the one out of, because there was a couple different LED.
This is not the one out of California. The proposal out of the company from California was...
We got three proposals.
Right.
We met with all three of them face-to-face and discussed and talked and... Actually, one company said, you know, one way of doing this is to do a flat sum instead of percentages. And
percent of construction costs.
Right. And the more we talked to the other two, one of them said they wouldn't do it. And Danforth said they would. So
right.
Danco and Tanco both sent us lump sum
proposals. I think any contractor would love to have a one-page contract that doesn't have any specifications or details in it to hold them to. So, you know, from the contractor standpoint, that's probably good for them, but it's not so good for the town from the town standpoint. So we need to do a little more work with them to see if we can come to an agreement that meets our standards from a contracting standpoint. But with that being said, I thought these were good numbers to at least present to you guys about where we were. So there's some assumptions here. The top line is the National Grid buyout. Two of the three vendors that we talked to about this felt that there was a little bit of wiggle room, that we might be able to get that number a little bit lower and get the buyout cost down. The other assumption here is they gave us a price for handholds, so buried handholds for fuse disconnects of $400 each, and we got about 399 of them for our lights in Radisson and any post-op lights in other areas of town that aren't attached to poles. To date, it's my understanding that National Grid is requiring those fuse disconnects to be in a handhold. They're not allowing them to be in the pole base. So I made the assumption that that's what's going to happen. However, there may be some negotiation in that as well, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to splice and put a handhold in for something like that when there's already a splice at the base of the pole that they could wire that fuse disconnect into. So hopefully National Grid will come around on that and lower their expectations, and that could result in a $159,000 savings. But as of right now, estimated project cost is $1.8 million. We go to the second sheet. So this is debt service calculation and estimated annual savings. So there's some assumptions here. We assumed a 3.5% interest rate on a 10-year bond. We're bonding the whole thing. So our annual debt service payment would be $214,725. Currently, our annual National Grid charges are $1 shy of $300,000. We anticipate that we'll, with the LEDs, we'll use about a third of the energy that the conventional high-intensity discharge lights that we have are. So our current electrical usage is like $48,000 a year or so, someplace in there. So we took a third of that, and we have that savings as well. So, and then, you know, once we buy the lights from National Grid, we're responsible for maintaining them. We really don't know what that cost is going to be. I thought that 5% of the cost of construction would be a very conservative number to put in there long term. So using those numbers, our estimated annual savings year one is only $766. This is very conservative. The beauty of this is these lights have a 15 to 25 year life expectancy. The bond is paid after 10 years. Once the bond is paid, there would be a $215,000 annual savings, which is huge. The other way that you could do this would be to extend the bond to a 15-year bond or something like that, so that there's more savings up front. My position would be pay off the bond as soon as you can, and then save money to do upgrades when the lights need to be replaced, so we're not bonding to replace those lights. Would be, you know, that's the way I would approach it. So I can give you numbers with a 15-year rate, but I think the, you know, these are estimates at this point in time. They're very conservative. The bottom line is, if we move forward with this, you know, there is not a huge savings right off the bat, but after 10 years, there's a really big savings. The actual return on investment is about 6.5 years. So the actual return on capital outlay from a savings standpoint would be about 6.5 years. So it certainly makes sense financially. It's just a matter of how you want to structure the debt service payment, whether it be a 10 or a 15 year or 20 year bond, to determine how much savings there is right off the bat.
So Al, what's the $299? That's what we're paying
National Grid. It's currently Grid. What we pay National Grid annually.
But it's more than energy cost. It's maintenance.
$254,000 of that, I believe, or $245,000. So about $250,000 of that is maintenance cost.
Maintenance.
Concrete light pole base.
$250 a year for each concrete foundation.
So there's no substantiation for that number. It's just.
Yeah. And that isn't actual maintenance happening. That is just.
It's what they charge us for a maintenance fee.
Pay them
by contract.
They have them.
Yeah.
Because they can.
Because
right.
They can.
And, okay. Right. And so then, what would an actual how much maintenance actually happens on these things every year?
Not a lot. I would say that I get less than a dozen reports of lights out in the town a year.
And most of those are changing a bulb.
Yeah. Most of those are, I contact the National Grid Lighting Coordinator and say there's a light out here, they go out and they change the bulb.
Well, they typically change the ballast, and then they can, when they do that, then they get another 10 years amortization off the lamp. It's kind of how they hold you hostage.
Yeah.
But they use a cherry picker?
Yeah,
how do
it's
they
a
change
bucket
them?
Truck.
Okay.
Yep.
And would we be able to do that? Or
We would contract it. But the $67,000 that I estimated for maintenance, I certainly would hope that 12 calls wouldn't cost $67,000 in a year. So,
do you think there's any chance that there's more that we're just not getting?
Possibly. I don't think it's significant. I don't.
Out of those dozen calls, that's. Are those primarily because those fixtures are old? Like, we'll have new fixtures in, so then could that $66,000 be?
Well,
then,
yeah, and there's no
less?
Bulbs. There's no bulbs in an LED.
Right.
You know, so it's a.
It'd be more like if
so
a car would
a,
run into.
Yeah, if a car ran into a pole and busted one, that type of thing would be our biggest maintenance cost.
estimated annual
maintenance. You said before that no other towns have really looked into this recently?
I mean, there's a few, but it's not as popular as you think it would be.
It's that 10 years, so probably.
Well, I mean, like you said, you could finance it for 15 and see a saving, initial savings right off the bat, probably, you know, $40,000-$50,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to me, I would rather get the debt service paid off as soon as we can and save money so that when it's time to replace them, we don't have to bond ever again.
Have we looked into signing a contract, a maintenance agreement with a company where maybe we pay them up front $15,000 to $20,000 and they take care of anything?
Anything's on the table. So actually, Danforth was said part of their proposal, what was included in their proposal, was that they would prepare the bid documents for the maintenance contract for us, which is, you know, they do this stuff all the time. So that's a huge help.
So then we could see the $66,000 go down to whatever the
Maintenance contract number was.
Okay.
They would help us write the contract first.
We still have to bid it and award it, but I think that's a really very, very conservative number, maybe by a factor of two or three.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if LEDs are fairly maintenance free, I mean, are we just talking about poles getting hit by cars? I mean,
that could be a lot of it, or maybe a photo eye, you know, going bad, you know, so that the light isn't turning on. But I don't see it being, I just don't see it a huge maintenance expense there. I really don't. And hopefully, like I said, National Grid's buyout cost, we can negotiate that down some too.
No, maybe this is just too squirrely, but if a car hits a pole, I mean, their insurance company would,
we would get reimbursed, but we still
front the money.
All right, so it sounds like a good deal. I would do it in 10 years. I wouldn't wait. I would do it in 15.
Have we looked at insurance costs? Do we put this out to our broker to see what it would cost?
I have not, no.
That's got to be considered.
Yep.
Because you're talking about $1 million worth of lights.
Additional infrastructure, yep.
Now,
actually, the lights themselves, well, that's interesting. Because the cost of the lights themselves is only $489,000.
But we'll own the pole and the base.
Yes.
So what we need to do, what a big factor is.
So their price for new poles, a whole new assembly, base, pole, wire, light, their estimated cost is $4,300, I believe, $4,300 and change. So 592 times $4,300, whatever that is.
Maybe we need to look at the insurance costs, because if the savings is only $766 a year, we're going to have $1 million worth of equipment on the road that can either be damaged or damage someone else. We need to know what the liability costs are to owning these structures.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a good question.
Well, and the maintenance, because the maintenance, of a maintenance cost could turn the annual savings into a $40,766.
Yep.
I mean,
right.
So there's a big sway there.
Yep.
But we know that there's going to be a liability.
Yeah. Cost. I mean, and I have, like I said, in the construction cost estimate, I put a 10% contingency into it just because we're so preliminary in the design.
They get into these lights, who knows? I mean, some of these lights that they're getting into, what, went into Radisson 50 years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
So, good work, though.
I mean, we're moving along on it. Like I said, I just am not comfortable with, you'll see, we're going to want a table resolution.
The last one.
We're close, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, we need a better contract before we can authorize that. I think we're also going to table E, but we'll get there in a minute. Garage door, overhead door repair replacement. We had an incident last fall. The door got damaged with the backhoe coming through the door. The bottom three panels got bent. I signed a work order last year on September 22nd, authorizing to repair the three panels at a cost of $2,227. I thought I got done, and Jerry or somebody else had signed the voucher. Never heard anything more about it, and then Jerry dropped off proposals to put a whole new door on with an opener. We don't have a whole new door with an opener budgeted. He did get a pretty good quote from Wayne Dalton of $5,765, which, you know, that's $3,500 over the repair, but it's a whole new door with an opener. It's not budgeted, so it's a matter of, do you want to use...
No, I want to fix it. I want to stick with what was budgeted. I want to do the work that was
budgeted.
Well,
actually, I was trying to spend it last year, but they didn't get the work done, so...
Is it the same price to fix the door?
Yeah, they said they would honor the quote that they gave us last September, and they never followed through on getting it done.
Let's do that, and if he wants to submit for a new opener next year's budget, you can do that. I don't like how that transpired.
I'm fine with that. Anybody else want to
weigh in? Why didn't it get repaired?
Wayne Dalton never showed up. That's the bottom line. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest. I got a million irons in the fire. The last thing I'm worried about is
I get that
tracking a contractor that.
But a voucher was signed.
No.
Work order.
Authorizing them to do the repair was signed, just because I didn't want to lose heat out the door all winter long.
Well, right. Which we did,
because I didn't know it never. Nobody brought it to my attention that it never got fixed until, I don't know, a week ago when Jerry dropped these proposals off to Dave and said, I want to buy a new door.
So, it'd be like, it's like an echo chamber. Highway meetings probably would have caught this. If the highway committee would meet with or without the participation of the highway superintendent,
I don't know if it would have caught this, but I'd love to see meetings.
Meetings on a regular basis. These things get caught because you're always, things stay on the agenda until they're taken care of. I would, you know. And that's why I'm not comfortable with saying, oh, well, you know, we get a whole new door for just $3,500 more. We budgeted a certain number of dollars for repair.
Well, the repair, I knew we had money in our building's account last year to pay for it, but we're still
cost?
Okay. $2,227.
So, but technically, where did that money go? It went into fund balance?
It did, yeah.
It went back into fund balance. So we have to, I think, because it was supposed to be done in 2018,
yeah,
it wasn't. Now it's 2019, and we didn't budget for it.
We just paid for it out of the buildings and grounds budget for 2019.
Right,
and
but because it was not allocated for this year, we should pass a resolution authorizing it because it wasn't encumbered. We don't encumber funds.
I don't know. I mean, this is a repair. But we don't do a resolution for every, like when we had to spend money to put the new card for our phone system in, we didn't do a resolution for that. It was, hey, our phone system's down. The voicemail card.
Well, right, but that there's a difference there. That's an immediate need for communications. For allows this building to communicate to the public to fix the door. You know, I have no problem fixing the door, but I don't want to spend an extra $3,500 because we got a great deal on it. For the door company to come back, that takes a lot of guts. Hey, we didn't come and do the job we said we were going to do, but I'll tell you what, if you pay us $3,500 more, we'll throw this in. No. Not taking any comments. Thanks, Gene. I mean, it's just, we should stick to the budgets
I'm just tempted. Even though it's a good quote, because they didn't show up last year, should we go out to bid?
You got three quotes.
That's not the question.
You got three quotes.
No, but I was just thinking, if the same company didn't show up last year, I,
Look, if they're going to do the work, they're going to do the work. It's a known company. It's not a fly by night. But if they want a garage door opener, then they should budget for it in next year's budget.
No, I mean, there's a garage door opener there.
There's one on it.
Yeah.
Does it work?
Yeah.
We just want a new one, right? Okay. I mean, do you guys need to discuss this anymore?
Well, I hate to beat a dead horse, but I don't understand how you run a shop and your door is broken, and it's broken all winter long, and you don't say anything.
It operates. It works.
Yeah. Just loses
it's just
heat.
Ugly. And there's a hole in it.
Yeah, and it just loses heat at the seams.
I know, but why didn't the highway superintendent bug us to say the door's not getting fixed? I thought it was getting fixed. He's not here to ask that question.
Good point.
I just don't get it. I mean, if your front door is broken.
If they can fix it,
I think we should put a resolution on it because it wasn't budgeted for.
Yeah,
I have no problem doing it. Yeah. It's not an emergency, but it should be done.
No problem with it.
We'll add a rest. Oh. We'll add it. We're taking off F. We'll just change item F. We'll go G and then remove F.
I think we also might be removing E, L sets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or tabling it.
Yeah.
Least.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with E.
Yeah. Go to G.
Okay. Motion. To allocate
or just authorize the repair of the highway garage overhead door in the amount of $2,227 to Wayne Dalton out of the 2019 building.
Yeah, my shorthand is not what it was. Repair of the highway garage door.
Overhead door, I think you should say.
Garage overhead door.
2227
to Wayne Dalton.
In the amount of $2,227.
Okay.
Out of the 2019 building maintenance budget.
Okay. That's G.
Oil water separator.
You saw the proposal from Plumlee that was attached to the agenda. I've done tank closure reports. Last one I did was 14 years ago. I'm sure the regulations have changed since the last one I did. It's just not something I do every day. I'd feel much more comfortable with using Plumlee, who is an environmental group that specializes in petroleum installation and closures, do the report and the plans and specs for this. I have $10,000 in my budget for outside services. That's what I would like to pay for this out of.
$69.50.
Refresh my or our memory. We've been talking about this oil and water separator for a couple of years.
Yeah, we have money in this year's budget to replace it. So they're going to prepare the design and the tank closure report so we can get it off our patrol, that tank that's there off our petroleum bulk storage permit.
But we didn't budget for this, though.
I was going to try to do the design in-house. I probably can, but I have a lot in front of me.
Yeah, you have, I guess what I'm getting at.
Well, no, I do have money in my budget for outside consulting services, and this is what I would like to use that money for.
But maybe I'm being too persnickety here, but and I'm not criticizing you, but when we put something in the budget like buying an oil and water separator, we need to incorporate the design cost as well. It's one big package.
And
well, so we don't.
Like I said, if I had designed it in-house, which I can, actually, I'm less fearful of the design of the oil water separator than I am of the closure report.
So, you know, one of the many benefits of having an engineer in-house is that, like, we don't bill highway for design projects. We don't bill highway when Al's out monitoring road work. You know, we don't bill highway like that. This is work that's going to be done for facility, for our facility, but specifically for the highway department. You know, we allocated funds, additional funds for Al, because Al's one man and he can only do so much. In between site plan reviews and everything else that we have him doing, you know, every municipality that I know, including the Village of Baldwinsville, that has an in-house engineer, and Van Buren, allocates money for outside services. You know, Al's not a professional in everything, and clearly,
I think I'm being misunderstood. I'm not being critical. I'm of Al or using an in-house engineer for it, but it seems to me when we get presented with a project, keep in mind, folks, the project is going to cost only $3,200, but there's probably a design feature here that's twice as much. I mean, that would have been nice to know.
Well, yeah, I mean, we actually budgeted $25,000 for the oil water separator, so there may be enough money in the buildings and
because they're saying $3,200.
For the design.
Oh, for the design.
For the design. That's not for, that's just to design the system.
Oh, okay.
Because you have to, you still need to put a monitoring alarm on it. So it's not just, but the, quite frankly, I got quotes on some of the tanks that they use for this stuff. The tanks are $7,000-$8,000. Mm-hmm. And we have $25,000 in the budget. Because I figured, hopefully, I mean, we should be able to set that tank with our equipment and dig the hole with our equipment, and you know, then we can contract with a plumber if we need to do the tie into the sanitary sewer lateral.
We have that much money in the budget for the project. Why don't we pay for this out of the budget?
Because until I have a cost estimate for what the final cost is going to be, I would rather.
Okay.
I would rather.
But we can consider
if we need to, we can do a budget transfer after. If there's money left, we can do a budget transfer.
Yes, it doesn't matter, but it's nice to kind of have all the costs.
That leads into our next buildings and grounds expense.
All right, so are we doing this? Is that what do you?
I would like to.
I'm fine
get authorization
it.
To do it.
I'm fine with it.
Part of that 25,000,
it's on there, right?
Is there a
disposal of
yes.
Yeah. It's in there and all that.
Yes.
Do you think
yes.
you're going to need to use everything in for outside services in order to get Plumlee, or do you think you're going to have anything left over?
No, you got 10.
I got 10, and that's $69.50. So there's $30,050 left still. So yeah, but that brings us to our next topic. So
always a next one.
We got our annual petroleum bulk storage inspection report on Tuesday, and there's some new EPA regulations and testing requirements that I was not aware of. So we got a notice of violation. I reached out to Paragon today and Cortland Pump and Tank today about doing this additional testing, and. You know, once I get those numbers, I'm going to need to have that taken care of, that testing taken care of, so that we're in compliance. Because the violation, if we don't give them a plan of what we're going to do in the next 30 days, they can fine us up to $37,500 a day. So we want to make sure that we give them a plan that, hey, we got quotes from these companies, they're going to do the testing for us. And that will be, you know, that'll be enough to keep them from finding us.
So these are new regulations?
Yeah, the EPA. So the EPA is requiring you to do interstitial monitoring inspection, sump testing, and spill bucket testing, and overfill prevention inspection.
And how are the new regulations usually communicated? Through this?
Very poorly.
Well, I'm assuming that. So this is really your first.
Yeah, this is, hey, you're in violation of this section of the EPA code. Fix it.
Or else.
Yes.
Okay. That's terrible. Right,
so this is their communication technique. You know.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Yes.
Nice. Okay.
Yes.
So
I was really excited when I heard that the bus garage is going to be operational in September, because if they are, those tanks are coming out of the ground. We got to close those things and fuel at the bus garage. It only makes sense. Those tanks are a liability and a maintenance headache. The village has been fueling with the school district for quite some time now, I think over a decade.
So is the fire department.
So is the fire department.
Police department.
It just makes sense. Let them handle the liability of having the petroleum bulk storage permit, close our tanks, close our petroleum bulk storage permit, and be done with it.
So what do you need from us? You got to put a plan together.
I got to put a plan together. I'm just giving you
a heads up.
Hey, okay. This is coming down the pike. I'm going to get quotes, and you know, we'll be getting compliance.
Thank you. It's almost, when's the bus garage coming online?
September. Well, I don't know. He said September, but I heard it not until 2020. That's what I was told.
Well, we need a fiber optic cable. We got
we need an oil separator anyways, just for when we wash the truck.
But that does not count as petroleum bulk storage once it's tied into the sanitary sewer. So we won't have to have a petroleum bulk storage permit at all once we take out our fueling station.
Okay.
Once with oil water separators in and we take out the fueling station, no petroleum bulk storage permit anymore.
Okay.
Which is a huge liability.
Okay.
And the school district pays less for fuel than we do. So on top of that, there's a...
I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. You have until July, or we have until July 18th to get this done.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I talked to Mr. Kemp on the phone on Tuesday, and he said show us a plan before July 18th, and that's all you need to do.
Okay.
It actually says on one page in there.
And this is what? Palmy's going to help us with this as well.
No, I'll go to a pump and tank consultant, service provider to do this testing.
Okay.
And what we don't know is there may be things that have to be fixed.
There may be. We don't know. I mean, we've never tested our spill buckets. We've never tested done interstitial monitoring inspection. We haven't done these things through this to these tanks before. So there may be deficiencies that we don't know about.
Can you CC the board when you email that plan?
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure.
Petroleum tank police.
Yeah. They mean business.
37 G's a day.
Wow.
Yeah. 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 That's a chunk of change. No, we'll have it taken care of. It's just a matter of, hey, this is where we're at. We're gonna have to spend some money on it. I'm working on it to get costs of what, you know, to get an estimate of what those costs are gonna be. I'll have it on the next agenda before we even approve the resolution. I'll send the EC the quotes and say I'm gonna ask for the board to authorize this expenditure. So we're back in compliance and in good standing.
Sure.
If we are going to have to make any repairs, do you foresee us using building maintenance funds rather than pulling from fund balance?
I would hope those spill buckets aren't all that expensive. Yeah, stuff like that. I mean, unless we find something majorly wrong with the interstitial space between the dual walled pipe or I mean, the sumps aren't that expensive. This shouldn't be tens of thousands of dollar repair. If it is, we'll say close them now and we'll fuel at the existing school bus garage before I spend tens of thousands of dollars for repairs on something that we're not going to use after next year. Yeah, I hope we're not going to be using it after next year.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thanks. Last one.
Cali DuBois East.
Yep.
I don't think we're going to move forward. We're going to table that.
We can set the securities resolution. I don't think they're in a position at this point in time for dedication. The developer made a request asking the board to pass a resolution to author, because he has got 5 lots sold. He would like to be able to start all 5 houses above and beyond the 2 houses, the model and the spec that he's allowed to construct by town code prior to the map being filed. You know, that's a...
That's in our code that we allow code, up to 2?
We allow up to 2 on a new project, a model and a spec before the map is filed.
Is there any exposure to the town in allowing for three additional homes to be built.
If anything, it's a good insurance policy that he's going to get everything done so that he can actually sell the five homes that he constructs, because he can't sell them until the map's filed.
So it increases our leverage.
To some degree, yeah.
So why is it, why is there a preclusion to, why does he have to ask to, but why do we have that as a policy where you can't build the extra
house? Because currently we only allow one residential dwelling unit on any parcel, period. Okay. The code gives an exemption for new development so that the developer can build a model and a spec home. Mm-hmm. So that's the...
And I think in talking with their engineer, I think they're anticipating the July 18th meeting being ready for...
Having everything in place.
Everything in place. Mm-hmm. I think given the weather, they're... I think everyone's trying to.
And in that regard, I got a call from the attorney today, asking me what it was, a voicemail, but asking me what I needed for the road dedication, so I know that they're in the process of doing all that.
What's the comfort level of the board to allow for
so
that?
What about the two parcels that we're going to take ownership of?
That's what we're waiting on the legal paperwork for. We haven't not gotten that yet.
So, why is it, what, you said there's leverage to some degree if we allow them to build five. What is their leverage? Like, why, how does it?
They don't really have any.
They just want to get...
They just want to, well, we all know how short the construction season is in upstate New York. He's got five houses that he wants to have up and dried in before fall.
Before it rains again.
Well, we know that's not going to happen, but before snow flies. For a small builder like him, that's a pretty good task. That's a pretty good task.
What's the downside for the town? Is there one? Is there a precedent we're setting? Is there anything, any legal precedent that we need to be aware of?
It's within our power. It's within our ability. Correct?
Yeah, I mean,
to modify.
Sure, you can always do that. I mean,
case by case, it's not set in precedent.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, so that would be, you know, if we table the dedication, which we think we have to do.
We've set a precedent there by denying other developers.
Correct.
That.
We don't have the right paperwork.
We don't have all the paperwork. We don't have as-built drawings. We don't have the stuff that we need.
I wouldn't be comfortable with that anyhow.
Yeah, so
that's tabled or voted.
That's tabled. I'm just when I ask to put this stuff on the agenda.
I have no problem putting it on.
I stated in my letter what they needed to do to have it actually happen. They didn't do that, so that's that's on them.
What does anybody else think about the five houses?
I'm just trying to think of more benefits for us. Is there anything more the developer's going to do if we allow it?
Well,
don't want to be selfish.
Build a place faster.
I don't want to be. I'm just asking from a town perspective.
Well, I mean, from that perspective, the quicker he builds the houses and dedicates more or files a plat for more lots, the more money that come into our coffers.
Building permits.
Well, yeah, building permits, taxes. We've got fee and little parks. We've got the $1,000 per lot negotiated in incentive zoning. I mean, there's a lot of...
I'm surprised this hasn't happened before. You would think with the short building season, this would be like a...
I mean, I'll be perfectly honest. This subdivision should have been done last fall. Uh-huh. His contractor really... dragged his feet, was not punctual on completing the project. This is not that big of a project.
Didn't they have issues with grid too?
Grid's in there right now, but I mean, it's been, so they've had their bond into grid for construction, their bond and their payments into grid since October of last year. Grid showed up on Tuesday.
They're very busy.
So they're trying to play catch up.
Yes.
All right, I don't want the roads, but I don't know. I'm comfortable.
I'm fine. I'm fine with five homes. it gives us more leverage. July 18th.
They're going to have everything done by July 18th anyway.
And if they're not, they don't get.
They don't get the mail.
There's no exposure.
Is that a resolution that has to be written?
I think it should be.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's a modification of our current code. Now, Tony, we can do this, right?
Yeah.
Item A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H.
So what's coming off besides E? Is C coming off, or is that
E and F are coming off?
E and F, yeah. But and what about C and D?
Yeah, we can still set the securities requirements.
Okay.
To allow the
developer of Collington Point East.
East to construct
obtain up to 5 building permits in phase 1 of the project prior to filing of the final plat at the county clerk's office.
To obtain up to 5 building permits prior to final
plat approval. That's true.
Period.
Yep.
You guys good with that?
That is it. Yep. Could you read that?
Can I get a motion to allow the developer of Collington Point East to obtain up to 5 building permits prior to the final plat approval?
Okay.
Dina loves it when we do this stuff to her.
Quick executive session.
Sure.
Can I get a motion to go into executive session related to a contractual matter?
I'll move it.
Second. I'm sorry.
All those in favor?
All right.
Bob, you've got that second.
Executive session. 6:55. Hey.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm back. How are
doing,
you?
Roman?
I'm
doing good, Dave. How are you?
Good. I don't know if this one's tiring me out, but I'm going to try it anyway.
All right, we'll try it.
We'll see. If I follow